Hi, this is Miss Melis, the Bathtub Mermaid, and you're listening to Tales from the Tub. In today's episode, I'm sharing three of the short stories I've written for Horror Dailies, but I've had some friends help me out by reading two of them for me. In our first story, a young monster gets to haunt his first child. Listen to The Rules, read by Chuck Tomasi.
Harry, remember, it's only your first night. No one expects you to be perfect. Just go, growl, and get out. I know, Mom. Avoid the light. It won't actually cause you to combust, but it can still hurt you. Remember what happened to Daniel? He was looking up at the closet ceiling when his assigned child turned the light on. He was bulb blind for days, kept bumping into furniture, nearly got caught. Avoid the light, Harry repeated dutifully. Got it, Mom. And don't forget about the rules. The rules? Harry, we've been over this a fafillion times. If the child is sipping water, they are protected. If the child has stuffed animals, they are protected. His mother saw him roll his eye. What? The stuffed animals? They aren't real animals, are they? Of course not, Harry. They're made of plush and foam and fluff. Are you sure? Because Becky said, Harold M. Puddle, how many times have I told you that your sister makes up these stories just to bait you? The stuffed animals are not real. Then, how do they protect? Because children have imaginations, Harry, and they believe. I thought imagination is what we were made of. Well, yes, but... So if they can believe we are under their beds or in their closets, and believe the stuffed animals are real... Harry had a scary thought. Mom, what if they believe that we aren't real? Hush, youngster, you might as well wonder whether dragons really breathe fire. Something simply are. Okay. He straightened his posture and held out his claw-tipped paws. Do I look fearsome enough? Oh, very much so, his mother assured. She pulled him close and gave him a slurpy kiss. I'm so proud of you, Harry. You're not even 800 yet, and you've been assigned your own child. Just don't forget about the blankets. Harry knew about those, but his eye grew wider anyway. Mom, it's the biggest rule there is. A child under a blanket protection must never be touched. If your child is under blankets, what do you do? Go, growl, get out. Harry repeated the advice she'd given him a few minutes before. But he had a question. What if a hand or a foot isn't covered? Well, some of the most experienced monsters sometimes tickle a child's foot or brush their fur against a child's hand, but you shouldn't try that on your first night. If the child wakes up and you get caught, you'll be sent back to remedial hunting. No one wants to spend their entire life chasing cats and dogs. Harry had met some of the remedial hunters. They ended up patchy and toothless. He definitely didn't want that. I promise not to try it, at least not tonight. Good for you, Harry. Now remember, you're scary, you're stealthy, and you can make children scream. I'm scary, he repeated. I'm stealthy, and I can make children scream. He took a deep breath. Okay, Mom, here I go. He stepped onto the ladder that would take him into the attic and then into the closet in the child's room, repeating it as he went. Scary, stealthy, scream. As the trap door opened, Harry heard his mother's voice. I love you, Harry. Harry grimaced happily. I love you too, Mom, he thought. Here I go.
October wouldn't be October without a little bit of a ghost story. This is a mostly true tale read by myself. The Lady of La Paz. Almost every year, during late spring or early summer, I visit my mother at her home in La Paz, Baja California Sur, Mexico. Every so often on these visits, I see something surprising. One year, I even saw a ghost. I call her the Lady of La Paz. The first time I saw the lady was during the moontide, when the water crept high up onto the beach, over the road, settling into pools of liquid silver. An airplane was flying low over the bay, heading toward the airport, the last plane of the night, and as its angle of descent shifted, its lights caught the wisps of the clouds that were still shrouding the moon, protecting us from the full power of its glow. Closer and closer the plane came, the bright front light changing the shapes of the shore, making creatures of the mangroves and turning the shadows into living beings. And that's when she made her first appearance. Her face was hidden by a veil, but the shape of her hat was unmistakable, as were the lines of her turn-of-the-century dress. She held a parasol. Her pace was steady, every step measured and sure, picking her way across the hard-packed sand, following the cone of light the airplane was casting groundward. Just as he reached the point, the beam of light that held her began to thin and her form to waver, as if she was dissipating on the faint breeze. That's when the clouds finally melted entirely away and the full moonlight burst through, and the lady turned then to stare out to the sea. She never looked my way. I never heard her voice. But somehow I knew that she was waiting, searching, pining for her lost love. I held my breath and watched, willing a man in a fedora to emerge from the waves and take her into his arms. But of course, he never came. And when the moon left the sky to the sun, she faded into daylight. When I told my parents about seeing the lady, my mother mentioned that she'd seen her, too, on the nights of the full moon. My stepfather, on the other hand, insisted it was just a trick of the light, a happy merging of surf and fog and the lights from the plane. I suppose I'll never know for sure if the Lady of La Paz was real or just a figment of my vivid imagination. The part of me that lives in the world of computers and technology and social media knows that moonlit nights and moontides can do funny things to our perceptions. The part of me that still, deep down, believes in the possibility of ghosts and soulmates wants there to still be magic in the world. And who's to say? Maybe the lady was real at one point. In my head, she's a pianist, a daughter of the family that owned the gold mine in El Triunfo, a student of Francisca Mendoza's, and her lover is someone her parents would never approve of, a miner, perhaps, or a seaman who helped to bring pianos to Baja Sur. I keep telling myself that someday I'll write their story, and then they will become real. And until then, well, if you're walking on a certain stretch of beach in Baja Sur, the one with the view of El Magote and the city lights of La Paz, and you happen to find a full moon above you and a moontide lapping at your toes, keep careful watch as the last plane flies low over the water en route to the airport. You might see the lady on her evening walk, holding her parasol just so, and waiting for her lost love. And finally, something that might make you rethink your next trip to the dentist. Enjoy Aegeus's Protege, read by Thomas Jancis.
You teach literature, don't you? The question was casual, conversational. Her answer was a terrified bobbing of her head up and down. In her defense, the metal bracket holding her mouth open and her tongue out of the way prevented actual speech. You know the Poe story, Bernice? Another uncontrolled nod. Spittle formed at the corners of her mouth, and he used a clean, white handkerchief to dab it away, then grimaced when he noticed the bubbles of saliva held traces of blood from the metal cutting into the corners of her mouth. Untidy, that. He did it wrong, the man in that story. He kept the conversation going as he reached for his favourite pliers, needle nose, with a cushioned grip. He waited until she was buried before he went after his prizes. Miraculous that she still had all of them intact, especially considering the general lack of medical care or balanced diet in that era. The brunette with the wide brown eyes twisted frantically in her chair, but the zip ties didn't have a millimetre of give in them. She was there to stay. Grave digging is such filthy work. Mud and bugs and gore. Much easier to choose a live subject. He leaned over her, pushed grey hair away from her sweat-soaked brow with almost tender care. This is going to be extremely painful. The pliers closed round his selected target. Smiling as he worked, he twisted, tugged, pulled, until his quarry came free, root and all, "Your dentist must be very good, my dear," he said to the woman whose screams couldn't quite make it past her throat. He lowered his voice to a reverent whisper. "You have lovely bicuspids." He let the small white object fall into a metal bowl. He expected that she'd react to the sound, but his expectation was met with great silence. She had fainted. No matter, she would wake soon enough, and they'd begin again. Wash, rinse, repeat, until he had all 32. Old Agius would be proud.
The Bathtub Mermaid Tales from the Tub is written and produced by Melissa A. Bartell and is recorded and produced using the Boss Jock iPad app and Audacity. It's licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 4.0 International License. In this episode, The Rules was read by Chuck Tomasi. Find out more about him at chucktomasi.com. And Agius's Protege was read by Thomas Jancis. Find out more about him at thomasjancis.com. The music for today's episode was Ghost Dance by Kevin MacLeod, which I found at the Free Music Archive. Complete links and contact information are at www.bathtubmermaid.com, but you can also find me on Twitter, at Meliss, M-E-L-Y-S-S-E. Thank you for listening, and remember, always pay attention to that cold, prickly feeling on the back of your neck, and never let your bathwater get too cold.